The Tony James Podcast.
Welcome to the Tony James Podcast. I'm Tony James, non-elite runner, run leader, and broadcaster, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on running, training, and all the equipment you need. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. Just search Tony James Running. All that said, let's get into the show.
The Tony James Podcast.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel now and make sure you never miss another upload.
Hello runners, I'm Tony James and welcome to episode 1 of Live Rewind. This is where we take some of the previous live streams I've been doing on YouTube and put them in a more podcast-friendly environment. In this episode, we catch up with sports scientist and running coach Neil Selenki. We discuss running nutrition. As runners, what do we need to be thinking about to fuel our training? And should we be looking at nutrition in a different way to be fueling our events? So sit back, relax, and enjoy Live Rewind.
Subscribe now and rate and review on your favorite podcast platform.
Well, good evening. Welcome along. 8 o'clock on a Tuesday night, and we can't keep him away. He's back with us, Coach Neil. How are you, sir?
Hiya, Tony. You're right. Very well, thank you. Very well. Back in Blackpool for my sins on my half term. How are you?
I'm feeling good. Raring to go. Loving this sunny weather. So we've asked the public what they want us to talk about in this particular one. And the comment that we got from a lot of people was, we want to talk about nutrition. We want to know about food. We want to know about fueling. So over the next hour, hopefully we're going to touch on some important aspects of fueling. And I know you are a stat man, so you've probably got the stats and all the metrics to go with it. So we look forward to hearing from those. Kim has joined us in Denmark. So good evening, Kim. I hope you haven't got any snow. Hope you enjoying the sunshine. I noticed, Neil, I don't know if you've seen this, but on the app, on the weather app, all the rain that we had from the end of this week and next week has all suddenly disappeared. It's not a problem. Love the sunshine. Would rather have sunshine than rain at any time. But as runners, as athletes, we need to take some, I'm not going to say, I think precautions is too strong a word, but we need to take some sensible steps when we are actually out running in warmer weather. Can you just give us some general advice on warm weather running, warm weather training?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in general, we all, as we're running, depending on distance, etc., if you remember 6 weeks ago, we touched on hydration slightly. So moving on from there without trying to repeat myself, even if you're slightly dehydrated on an endurance run, be that a 5K, 10K, half or a full or any specific, even worse, probably at ultra distances, it can, just a slight amount of dehydration can cause up to a 3% decline in performance. And the reason that being predominantly is because as your blood concentration loses water content, which basically is your respiration and sweat, it becomes more like a thicker substance. So your heart has to pump harder and work harder to be able to carry all that, all the nutrients and glucose and oxygen to the muscles to be able to contract. So in hot weather, this is augmented, obviously, because of the heat. We sweat more. We need to thermoregulate to keep us alive. Now, in normal situations, we would probably look at during endurance training losing approximately half a litre an hour. In normal conditions, depending on body weight, and this is very general. So, you know, very lean people will probably lose less and heavier people might lose more. So I'm just putting a round number on there. But if you're running a marathon or anything longer than that, especially in the heat, well, in normal conditions, should I say, it's recommended that you supplement or replenish or rehydrate as such between 450 and 750 milliliters of water per hour. So that's what, approximately 200 milliliters every 20 minutes, approximately. Obviously, in hot weather training, this needs to increase slightly. for the obvious reasons stated before. Just let me have a look at my notes on hydration. I think I've mentioned this on literally every talk that we've done in terms of electrolyte replenishment, specifically sodium, potassium, iodide. You get these in hypertonic drinks, etc. There's a lot of Lucozade, Powerade, all these kind of thing, liquids, etc. that you can supplement in. It's a good idea to kind of supplement them as well, because obviously the higher you sweat, the more salt kind of you lose out of your body. So in normal conditions, you're looking at 0.5 gram per liter of liquid that you should be replenishing in normal conditions. So it might slightly higher in hotter and warmer weather. So if you're buying a hypertonic drink or these electrolyte rich hydrating products that are on the market, then make sure that kind of you've got that 0.5 gram per liter in there.
Whilst it's safe to say you need to concentrate on your hydration, you need to make sure you're hydrating, not just the water, but the electrolytes, the salts, replenishing all that, as you say, using the isotonics, maybe using the salt tablets in the water, whatever. Whilst doing all that, you've got to think of the other end of the spectrum is not to take on too much water, because that can have problems as well.
Yes, 100%. I mean, you've got, obviously, you'll have a heavy gut. Too much water, you will dilute it's hard to say. If you've got, if you're just diluting water neat, you're not replenishing your sodium at the same time and your electrolytes, then you're diluting your electrolytes within your body, and that can be potentially dangerous, especially in ultra runs and hard, hot weather marathons. I mean, this is the extreme, but it is quite dangerous. But if you were to overhydrate with the electrolytes as well, I mean, that would cancel that and make that null and void as such, but it'll increase your body weight. So it'll make the marathon harder, or the 10K harder, whatever distance you're running, it'll make it harder, more challenging. And if you've got excess water bouncing around in your gut and your stomach as such, it's going to start pulling in your diaphragm, your rib cage, and you potentially cause a stitch and gastrointestinal discomfort. And yeah, that can have performance decrement effect, as such.
As you mentioned earlier on, we are repeating what we've said before, but the warm weather now with us, so I think it's worth repeating these messages so people understand that. Yeah, you've got to change your outlook on your hydration due to the warm weather. Like, maybe not running as hard, maybe not going as far, just taking all these precautions so you're not overstressing the body and not putting yourself in a position where you could become ill. And if we could just reconfirm that we talk about electrolytes and sodium and that, but what that is, that's the connection between the brain and the muscles and the heart. That's the way the messages flow. So if they're not being replenished, maybe the messages aren't getting through to the important parts of the body.
So sodium and potassium work hand in hand in the body in neuromuscular signaling as such. So if I send a signal to take a step and my feet start moving, that is controlled with the brain, and for that signal to be received, it's an electric signal that passes through from neuron to neuron to neuron until it hits your quadriceps and your hamstrings and calf muscle, etc. For it to be for the muscle to be stimulated, for it to be activated and be able to contract. Now, if you've not got the two neurons do not connect, it's got like an intersynaptic cleft. Gap between two neurons. They don't connect like a TV cable or whatever you'd call it. There's a little gap between it. It's electric energy then converts to chemical energy that converts back when it joins the next neuron as such. And to send this signal all the way down. It sodium and potassium are negative and positively charged, just like a battery, if you think of it as that. And without negatively and positively charged substances in your body, you can't send this signal, and it's detrimental to performance and life itself.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed, Neil, for just helping us out and recapping on that to start with. Right. If you have just joined us, good evening. Welcome along. If you want to say hi in the chat box, please feel free to do so. Kim has actually told us the weather in Denmark is great at the moment. So fantastic news all round us as summer arrives, because, you know, summer is always the best day of the year, isn't it? So,
indeed.
If you have just joined us, please come into the chat box, say hello. And if you do have any questions throughout the night, you know, please feel free to ask those. If you do put hashtag question, that always does help us identify them and stops them scrolling through quickly. Right. So we have had a few questions asked previously on a couple of the forums that we're on. So first of all, we'll start off with Helen's question. She was commenting that she's always feeling tired and feeling low. So what could we possibly be looking at as a problem there, Neil?
Is this the question relating to red meat?
Yeah. Sorry. I shall give you the question. I shall try and find it, see if I've got it to hand. Yeah. I don't eat any red meat and find sometimes I'm totally wiped out and run down. I do try and incorporate plenty of fruit and vegetable in my diet. Any recommendations for an all-round vitamin or tonics? Currently use Methotone, which seems to work well. Also, fueling in the heat recently, did a 10-mile and was constantly taking on water on board, but was still getting shivery legs.
Okay. It sounds to me, my initial thoughts, obviously not having seen you or had a major discussion on this really, red meats are rich in B12, and vegans supplement B12, vitamin B12. Etc. is naturally present in red meats, and not it's present in other products as well. But if you are chronically undernourished in B12, it can sometimes be the onset to anemia, and it might not be, you know, you might not be fully diagnosed as anemic as such, but you might have low iron and low hemoglobin as a result of that. So my initial thoughts are is if you don't eat red meat, supplement, buy some vegan vitamin supplements, either multivitamins or just the B12, which you can get separately, and see how that impacts, because it will instantly, within days, reverse the effect, and you should have more hemoglobin, iron, and proteins carried around your body, so you won't feel as lethargic and fatigued, especially in the heat. It probably makes it even worse.
If you have any form of blood test, they always do tests for B12. It is one of the standard ones. And just to give you an idea of what B12 is, B12 is naturally occurring in soil. And as humans, we don't necessarily forage in the soil anymore. So the general place we get our B12 is through meat sources, as Neil has said. So it's the animal is eating the grains and whatever and picking up the B12. And then when you're eating the meat, you're getting the B12. So it's coming through as the middleman. The meat is the middleman, so to speak. But there are plenty of B12 supplements out there, as Neil has said. You can get tablets, you can get oral sprays. But also, if you check cereals and other items, things like your oat milk, your almond milk, etc., these all come fortified with B12. So it is worth checking your labels, and you'll find that there are lots of food sources that do have B12 in there. So it is worth looking, because everybody can be deficient in B12 if we're not careful. So yeah, there's plenty of opportunities to find that.
Yeah, a good way to track it is use nutrition apps to log your diet. Just even if you're not on a diet, it's really interesting to kind of look at what you're doing. And I've done it initially back in January when I wanted to lose a tiny bit of weight, and successfully, but it was really interesting. I thought my diet was pretty good, and you know, when I talk to people, they'll go, oh yeah, my diet's spot on. I'm like, well, let's log it for 3 weeks and then we'll see. I'm sure there's always room for improvement, which Matt had as well. And then I started losing weight, and I reduced the number, the amount of meat I was eating, because I just wanted to reduce the amount of saturates that I was eating at the time. And that was, and as a byproduct, my B12 dropped significantly. So I am now on multivitamins. I don't have them every day. I have them every 2 days because that's enough for me, even though the box says I should have one a day, but that's because they'll sell more tablets, obviously. not because I actually need it.
Fair enough. Right. We have a family member of yours has just been on. It's cold in Hungary. Got my pullover on, but still cold.
Oh, old man. All right, Dad.
Right, so we hope that's helped you, Helen. Maybe look at the B12, as you say, tablet, oral spray, or maybe even just looking at your diet and seeing if you can pick up your B12 from something else, like, as I said earlier on, something like oat or almond milk has it, etc.
Tony, have you tried nutrition apps? And if so, just out of curiosity, is the one really good for vegans? Because I've only worked really in terms of clients, and my experience is really through omnivores, really. But do you know, or has any of anyone out there who is a vegan, have they worked with apps specifically for vegans?
I haven't used any nutrition app at all, but my wife has. It's My Fitness Pal. I think she's been tracking it on that particular one. Hold on, well, Siri's just kicked in. Did somebody say Siri? Because it's just kicked on the computer, but never mind. So my Fitness Pal, she's used that to track, and it just does general tracking, so she's used that. But nothing vegan specific.
It's something I'm going to look into after on the back of this conversation.
Yeah, I haven't used anything, but I think it's about every 12 months, I do a blood test. You can get these online blood tests now where it's a fingerprint test. You fill a little vial full of your blood, send it off, and they'll do a full blood workout. And I know on the ones I've been doing before, the B12 is specific on there, and also your cholesterol and what have you. So you can actually get these tests. They're not too expensive neither. They're about £80, and it gives you a good blood workout and can tell you where you are at that particular time. So I do that. I do that monitoring, but no. My official title, and this is an official thing, I'm a junk food vegan. I still eat a lot of processed foods. You know, when the people say, oh, a vegan diet must be a healthy diet, it can be healthy, but it can also be as unhealthy as you want. I went to Burger King last week whilst away on holiday and had a plant-based Whopper. It's a processed burger. It's plant-based, but it's processed, so it's still full of your oils and your saturated fats. You go to Greg's, you get a vegan sausage roll. It's still processed food. So, yeah, I'm still a junk food vegan. I don't eat whole foods all the time, so to speak. But we are careful about what we eat, and generally we do eat properly. Lots of potatoes in the diet, lots of veggies, you know, your broccolis, your cauliflowers, a lot of your leafy greens, your spinach is fantastic. That's in there. Chickpeas, loads of chickpeas. We've got through hundreds of tins of chickpeas. And then lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of mushrooms.
Full of vitamin D.
That's the one. So, yeah. follow a healthier diet, but still it's a lot of junk food in there.
Yeah, I mean, vegan and vegetarian diets are, if you're educated and you know what you're doing and you're not just doing it because it's fashionable, and you do it properly, it's more than optimal to to support a healthy life and to support performance. There's lots of studies out there that have compared vegan, vegetarian and omnivore diets to performance, and not a lot have found any major differences in terms of maximum performance, peak power output, VO2 max, and things like that. In terms of normal diet, so what I call normal diet, an omnivore diet and a vegan / vegetarian diet, the vegan and vegetarian diets tend to be higher in carbohydrates, so they tend to, I think they get from it better energy return, where vegan and vegetarian diets tend to be lower in protein. So it may affect their recovery as such. But again, vegan and vegetarian diets are higher in fat. So you've got the fat oxygenation and bioavailability there for fat to be metabolized. So even though they might be lacking in one area, they'll be compensated by another area in terms of performance and vice versa.
I must just say, we're not here to preach to anybody about what type of diet they should have. It's entirely up to everybody to choose whichever way they want to go. We're not going to tell you this is best or that's best. We're just here to give you the information around all aspects of nutrition for us runners. As I say, I just eat lots of potatoes, which is my favourite. No, and I see this on a lot of diets where they say, oh, potatoes are bad for you. They're full of carbs. Well, yeah, I'm a runner. I need fuel, so carbs are that. But the potato gets a bad rap because of the way we cook it. If we have it as chips, we dunk it in oil. If we have it as roast potatoes, we cover it in oil. If we make mashed potatoes, we throw butter and margarine in there, so it's full of fats and oils. If you have a jacket potato, you cut it open, and what's the first thing you do? You throw butter on it, so you're covering it in fats and oils again. It's not the potato that's the problem. It's the way we generally eat the potato that is the problem. But anyway, great book, The Starch Solution by Professor McDougall. Check that one out, The Starch Solution. That's a recommendation for you, Neil.
I'll have to read it. I mean, yeah, we are a Western diet. It's definitely diverse and different. Some fats, as you say, you've mentioned some really good fats in there, which I would not take out of my diet. And you've mentioned, obviously, the less healthier fats in there as well, which I would. Just a quick guidance, stay away from saturates and low LDL or LDL cholesterol food products, and more work towards or introduce unsaturated, so poly and mono unsaturated fats, something that you want to introduce into your body. How much? Again, it depends on your training and what you're doing and your distance. But normally, I'd say in your high volume training, you're looking at 60% of your total calorie intake should be carbohydrates, 25% should be fats, and 15% should be protein. Now, that normally, in a normal circumstance, this does fluctuate between individuals. In a normal situation, though, this should be enough to give you enough energy to cope with the training demand, give you enough protein and fats to tap into reserves kind of thing, and protein to replenish after your training. But this is generally a rule of thumb. If you were a heavier individual, I'd be looking at probably 60 carbs, 20 fats, 20 proteins. Or if you're on a ketogenic specific diet, and I wouldn't do that for the whole entire training program, if you, let's say, a marathon, I'd probably look at a 50% carb, 25% fats, and proteins respectively.
Can I just ask you about the keto diet? Because I can't get my head around this. A diet, when we see people, oh, I'm a runner and I'm on a keto diet, it just doesn't compute with me. So am I missing something here? As a runner, we're needing the carbohydrates because that is our primary source of fuel. But when you go into look at ketosis and what have you, you're cutting out the carbohydrates.
Yes.
I don't understand how this would work for a runner. I can understand it if somebody's doing it purely for weight loss, etc. But I can't get my head around how it works for somebody who's athletic.
Okay. Right. This will be a long answer. But yeah, I don't know if you remember back, Babs. When was the last one? 6 weeks ago, something like that?
Yeah.
And we talked about what hitting the wall was, and we talked about glucose being the predominant fuel. And when you run out of glucose or you start running low and you hit the wall, you transfer from glucose oxygenization to lipid and fat metabolism as such, and it will slow you down because it requires a lot more work for your body to metabolize fat than it does to metabolize blood sugar, glucose. So it, once you start hitting the wall, it's because you've run out of sugar or you're very low on sugar and you're starting to burn body fat as opposed to glucose. And yeah, so that's just keep that in the back of the mind as I'm talking about that. So a ketogenic diet as opposed to a high carb diet, high carb will give you the energy that you require. A keto diet will, over a longer period, so I'm talking 6 to 8 weeks. If you do a week of keto, you're wasting your time. But over 6 to 8 weeks of keto diet, so keto means high fat, low carb diet, would allow for your body to make the physiological adaptations to naturally metabolize fats a lot easier than what, let's say, my diet is as an omnivore, or your diet is as a you know, high carb or medium to high carbohydrate vegetarian, vegan consumer, etc. So I wouldn't do it. A ketogenic diet is really good at a pre-competition, 6 to 8 weeks before competition, to kind of make that allow that time for your physiological adaptations to take place, especially if you're doing like ultra or anything longer than a marathon. Definitely, I wouldn't do it for a half marathon. It's you've got enough blood sugar to maintain through that. But if you were to consider it for a marathon, you could do. And yeah, I mean, by breaking down ketones, you would, especially in ultra events or really long events, 100Ks, etc., you would predominantly start slow, because you've got a long way to go, and preserve your energy and burn your fat stores and fat metabolism first, and save your glucose for the later stages or the hills or whatever section, depending on where you're running, really. And save your glucose for that, and that's probably how you'd implement a ketogenic diet into a training program.
All right, thanks very much. Yeah, it has. I'd say I just couldn't get my head around it, and it's totally taken us off track to where we were supposed to be going tonight. But it's interesting stuff, and keto and ketosis seems to be the thing at the moment. You know, it's just a repackaged diet.
It is a fad, and there are benefits to it. I mean, I'll tell you the benefits. The benefits: it increases cellular signaling, so brilliant. Obviously, you lose weight or you lose body fat percentage as you're running. It's also, while you throughout your transition phase, it also allows for mitochondria biogenesis. So a way of saying it, mitochondria sites are where ATP is stored. ATP is paramount for muscular contraction. So the more mitochondria cells you've got, the better, because obviously the more ATP you'll have, the more ATP bioavailability you've got, the better the performance, etc. And it also prolongs your time to exhaustion, because if you're using fat stores as well as your glucose stores, so more efficiently than someone that's not in a ketogenic state, your time to exhaustion in a run will be sustained or prolonged as such. However, if you're chronically, so if you're on a keto diet on a long term, hyperglycemia will be an issue. So you could have chronic fatigue, relative energy deficiency in sport could be another byproduct as such. And you could... With low glucose levels, you're going to have low energy outputs. And low energy in the outputs means low gains. And if gains are the purpose of your 6-week training block, 12-week training block, or whatever you're doing, you might be wanting to increase speed, then stay away from ketones and use carbs, because carbs are going to give you that energy to be able to work at the intensity required. As such, so if you wanted to incorporate ketogenic strategies into your marathon training, I would probably do it on, I'd have my carbs for speed sessions, interval sessions, hill sessions and things like that, speed sessions, fast runs, but I would probably look at maybe going and doing my weekend long run, probably in a fasted state, because what's the point of carbing up to do a really slow run where you're not going to burn your glucose anyway? You're just going to be burning fats. So why not give your body the opportunity to adapt and go into your Sunday long run in a fasted state, or, you know, having not eaten in 4 hours prior to your run?
I've heard a lot about running fasted. It's about changing that, as you say, the changeover point from your glycogen to your body fats. It pushes it further, doesn't it? Yeah.
Depends how
far
you are.
Okay, okay, right. Ted's joined us tonight, flying Ted. Good evening, Ted. Thank you very much indeed for making the effort to be with us. And also, Chris, the running guy, is with us as well. So, evening to you, Chris. Thank you very much indeed for joining us tonight. Wow, right, so we've been prattling on now for 30 minutes, and we've still not got to the actual script that we set ourselves out for tonight, have we? So let's be talking about nutrition and for training. What should we be looking at whilst we're doing that training block, be it for the half, be it for the marathon, be it for whatever? How should we be looking at fueling ourselves for a training block?
Okay, again, this will vary inter-individually. Genetics play a massive role. Gender differences are paramount here. So this is a bit of a disclaimer. Don't go and do what I'm saying now. It will vary, and I would consult, obviously, a professional before you do anything as such. What I say when we say, well, you've just asked training, your diet in training would be completely different to what you should be doing on race day. Well, not completely different, but they do interact with each other. But on race day, your needs are going to be different as opposed to your needs on training days, etc. And the difference is, on race day, you want to make more out of that performance on the day, where on training days, it's not necessarily about your performance and what you do, but rather how can you maximize the gains that in return of the effort that you invest in your training sessions to be able to perform 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 6 months down the line, etc. And therefore, different considerations need to be made by this. But your body weight, your height, your age, your body fat percentage, body composition, all of these will factor in. So the formula I'm kind of giving is just a generic over-the-board average, you know, anything between 50 and 85 kilos range. But again, generic, doesn't apply to everyone, kind of thing.
Right. Just before you get into that, we'll say it one more time. You see it on all the training plans, you see it on all the training, online coaches and whatever. Before you start any physical exercise or physical training that's going to be putting your body under stresses that it's not used to, it could be wise to seek medical information first. So see your GP, see a physio if you've got any knocks or niggles, and consult with them before you do start a training block.
Yeah, a personal trainer might not be able to help, but a new maybe consult both a personal trainer or a nutritionist or someone in a university will, you know, if you're thinking seriously, or if you're in an at-risk population, then yeah, don't go and do it just because you fancy a change. It's, you know, you can cause yourself a lot of harm.
Okay.
Anyway, let's get cracking on. In terms of training, let's just say it's just endurance training. We're not going to look at anything particular. We're just talking about your Sunday long run or your Saturday long run. You're looking at, in terms of energy cost to that, you're looking at, again, depending on body weight, but let's say the lower body weight is 50 kilos, and let's say the higher body weight we're talking about today is 85 kilos. So if you're between that range, most runners kind of are. Some are, you know, above, some are below, depending on age, etc. Well, let's say between 50 and 85 kilos, should I say, sorry. Your lower end, so anyone that's 50 kilos, you're looking at burning 50 calories per kilometer, where the higher end, you're probably looking at 75, 85 calories per kilometer when you're running on your Sunday run. So that will obviously have to be met during or after the run when you were there. I know we've mentioned previously that the proteins that we've talked about several times, and my figure's still the same on proteins. So when you're replenishing your proteins after training, that should be about 1.6 grams per kilogram of body weight. Lipids, so your fats, unless you're in a ketogenic diet, should be between 1 gram or 1.5 grams per kilogram of body weight per day. Mm-hmm. And your carbs, depending on the intensity that you work out, should be between 7 and 10 grams per kilogram of body weight per day, approximately, in your diet. How you reach them diet protein intake, whether it's plant-based, whether it's in an omnivore diet, that's completely up to you. If you hit them figures, your diet's pretty much going to be thereabouts. It's really important not to neglect periodization. You want your carbs, or the majority of the carbs, if you're doing high-intensity training, high volume, you want your carbs beforehand, and you want proteins afterwards, because proteins help with your recovery, promote recovery afterwards. It's really important not to kind of eat prior, about 90 minutes to 2 hours prior a training session, to avoid kind of gastrointestinal discomfort as such. And I would, unless you're doing anything ultra, and again, during the race, you're going to have to eat, and you train for that, absolutely. But if it's a marathon, I'd avoid using eating high glycemic carbs 90 minutes to 2 hours prior to your training session. And the reason why is because high glycemic carbs are sort of simple sugars, so they break down easily and they're easily absorbed. Now, you're also automatically going to get an energy kick, and you'd think that that'd be a good thing because you've got all this sugar availability. Your blood sugars are up, you're hyped, you're bouncing off walls, basically, you're ready to go. It's not necessarily the case. There's been studies looking into this, because obviously you've got elevated blood sugar levels. This will automatically, your pancreas will, as a result, secrete insulin. Mm-hmm. And insulin has insulin that's bioavailable or in your body has two bad things or bad effects when it comes to exercise. One is it slows down or prevents lipolysis, and that's a posh word for metabolizing fat, mm-hmm. Which we've talked about earlier, is fat metabolization, especially in endurance events, is key. And another one is it doesn't allow, or it prolongs the onset of liver glycogen secretion. So if you remember back 6 weeks ago, we said that blood sugar is stored as glycogen, the polymer form, and it's stored in your muscle and your liver. Now, if you've got insulin bioavailability, insulin's flowing around your system, until your insulin's kind of disappeared out of your system, it's not going to allow for liver glycogen secretion. So it's going to, in the long run, so you might use all this sugar in your first half an hour of your run, 40 minutes, but you're still going to have insulin circulating around your body for a while, and your body's not, your liver's not going to give it to your muscles. So therefore, you might have a kick for the first half an hour, but your next hour is going to be a tough one.
Fair enough.
If that makes sense. So when you're starting your run or a hard training session or a longer run or even your race, it's really, I would advise starting it in like a euglycemic, a blood sugar natural level. Mm-hmm. I think have we covered most things there. Gut training your gut. There's another one. For longer events, so if you're doing an Ironman or ultra running, etc., or if you're thinking of, eating or consuming food on the go, I would advise you to incorporate these foods within your training sessions, mm-hmm. so that you're not going to cause like gastrointestinal discomfort on the day, because obviously it can cause pain, diarrhea. It can make you throw up, and it can have a detrimental effect on both performance and your experience on the day. So if you're going to introduce something in terms of fueling into your marathon run or a longer event, Ironman, triathlon, whatever the event that you're doing, make sure that when you're doing your training sessions, your brick sessions, your long sessions, make sure that you introduce these fuels and your body gets used to running and working with these fuels in your stomach, and just so that your race day is easier. And it gets used to, you know, when you're feeding, your body knows how much glucose to kind of give you there and then.
And it's like the kit thing, isn't it? It's nothing new on race day. Everything you should be doing.
I was just gonna say, don't try nothing new on race day. That's just silly.
And it could be as simple as I know you don't like energy gels, but I'm sorry for mentioning them. So even if you train with, say, an SIS blackcurrant, and you're always training with blackcurrant SIS, and you can't get hold of any on race day, and you suddenly change to orange, that really could make a difference, because you're not used to it. You have to train yourself into taking these. And it's also the frequency you need to train into it. If you're, again, depending on, everyone's different, everyone's fast or slow, whatever, it doesn't matter. But if you train to take a gel, shall we say, every 3 miles or every 40 minutes or wherever it may be, if you suddenly change that frequency on race day, you could end up in the same problems because your body's not used to it. So it really is a case of nothing new on race day, be it shoes, be it the vest, be it nutrition.
Mm, 100%, 100%. And again, volume, not just the product, but how much of it you actually take will make a difference as well, because if it sets on your stomach, it's not good. And for today, I've looked into some interesting research into, well, what do you have? Should I have? Because obviously pre-training and when you're doing your eight-week blocks and you're feeding for the marathon, well, what should we eat? Should we eat protein? Should we eat fats? Should we eat a combination? Should we eat glucose or carbs? What should we eat? What is the best option? Because everyone goes, oh, yeah, I'm going to need blood sugar. I'm going to need electrolytes. I'm going to need hydration. But no one thinks, do we need fats? If I've been on a keto diet, do I not need to have fats as well? What about proteins? No one really thinks of these products as such, and they've both got benefits and both of, you know, good and bad points as such, and it's very individualized as to who you are and what kind of diet you have previously. But I would say continue, and if you're on a ketogenic diet, continue with your keto stuff as well. So have some fats in there.
Right, so just to
go on.
No, you go on. You were going to say something important. I was going to say something silly. Go on.
All right. So, for example, fats. If you have fats during a run, that's brilliant. If you're, you know, in a keto diet, but it doesn't mean you've got to neglect carbs, because that's your main source of fuel. Either way, it doesn't matter what diet you're on. However, if you do have fats within a run, fat is broken down within your gastro and, you know, your stomach, etc. Once it's left your stomach into your intestines, bile is secreted. So the more bile you've got, it can increase your acid level, especially in the proximal small intestine. So that can cause you an upset stomach as well. So even though it's giving you the energy, it can also cause you a bad tummy at the same time. So practicing, suppose, cocktails, you might mix in a cocktail. It's, you know, every cocktail is different and it works for every person as such.
Right, no worries. Right, so what I was going to say is, Chris, the running guy, has put this comment up. Probably need to give my love of ice cream. I'll probably give up that love of ice cream, my London Marathon training. Training with ice cream, I can't see how you can actually keep fueling yourself every few miles with an ice cream, unless you're actually pushing the trolley with you.
Well, it's full of dairy. I mean, it's got protein and it's got fats. So that's good. I mean, when you're running, you've got access. I think we mentioned this last time, but when you're running, you've got exercise-induced muscle damage, especially, I mean, those of you that do trail runs, uneven surfaces, downhill running, that's going to exacerbate the downhill and downhill running, the impact, which is going to cause more muscle damage. So you want to recover from that. So my argument is, if you have protein during your ultra run or your downhill run, prior to your downhill run, if you've got protein bioavailability, will that reduce the amount of exercise-induced muscle damage that you've got? Now, this isn't scientifically proven, but people have looked into it, and there's an argument for it, but not a lot of studies have looked into it, obviously, because everyone's looked at it more in terms of a performance standpoint, but not necessarily an exercise-induced muscle damage standpoint.
Well, there's your PhD thesis right there.
Well, it could be. Yeah, that could be a thing.
Just going to nip through a few more of these comments at this moment. Okay. Hi to Rossa Runs from Pennsylvania. So good evening, wow. Welcome along.
Gone international, James.
Yeah, the Hammond is with us tonight. Good evening, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Currently doing, 100 miles in 10 days. So seems to be going well with that. So well done, Chris. Then we got another Chris, back to running channel Chris, running guy Chris. He's got a question for. Before a half marathon or marathon race, what would you recommend as the best dinner? I'll let you give a scientific answer, but my answer would be whatever you like, whatever you fancy, whatever makes you feel good. So that's my two pennies worth. But you know, have we got a scientific answer to that?
If we remember about 6 weeks ago, we talked about hitting the wall, and then we talked about carbo loading, and we're doing it throughout the taper phase, etc. But what I would be looking at specifically in the last 48 hours is carbs. Increase those carbs as much as you can, as opposed to a specific meal. I would be looking at carbohydrates specifically with a low GI, so glycemic index, which is going to give you slow energy release, loads of them.
Can you give us an example?
Anything with scientifically, polysaccharides, oligosaccharides are really, really good. So these take a long time to break down as opposed to monosaccharides. So stay away from fructose, maltodextrose, and glucose, and look at possibly dextrose and other carbohydrate-rich food products. Some of the
oats. Everyone talks about porridge for breakfast, don't they? Oats is a good one.
In terms of the evening before, carbs.
Well, it's fine for me because I'll just eat potatoes until they come out of my ears. But in if you are looking at your pastas or you're looking at your rices, and I've said this before and I'll keep saying this, whilst they're okay for you, look at your brown pastas, your wholemeal pastas and your wholemeal and your brown rices, because they are naturally better for you than the processed white ones, because the white pastas and your white rices have been processed. They have had some of the goodness taken out. So please, if you're going down the pasture and rice route, look at your wholemeals, look at your browns.
100%. Yeah. Less processed foods is always better. And another food source that helps with exercise and induced muscle damage, so both during a marathon and recovering from marathon, or during training and recovery from training, and periodization of this is quite important, but antioxidants, so fruits rich with polyphenols and anthocyanins, such as blueberries, red wine, got it, chocolate. I think we've mentioned this before, yeah. But all of which reduce the biochemical phase of exercise-induced muscle damage. So not only do you get micro tears when you're running quite a lot, because of the plyometric movement, and it just every time you bang it rips your muscles, hence the DOMS. But this, for them DOMS to be repaired, obviously you've got inflammation, so your immune system kicks in to inflame your muscles, so that comes with a bit of pain and swelling and blood flow there, etc. but also reactive oxygen species. So oxidative stress caused by reactive oxygen species. The more you train and the more the longer you run, the more oxygen you're sending down into your muscles. So that's, again, cut an apple in half, leave it out in the oxygen, see what happens to it. That's exactly what happens down in your muscles. It's an essential part of life, and it's essential part of growing muscles and, you know, killing off dead cells and regenerating new ones. So it's really important for life. But with training, especially high volumes, marathon, ultras, etc., the amount of oxidative stress that you put your body under is tenfold. It's quite significantly, a lot more stress than what you would if you were to just, I don't know, sup a cider on the beach. So antioxidants, if you were to have them in your fueling strategy, so while you're having your hypertonics, etc., if you've got a blueberry flavored one or you have some blueberries in there as well, it's going to give you that antioxidant, so it reduces the amount of exercise induced muscle damage that you occur during the marathon, etc. However, that's brilliant in terms of maintaining your performance for the marathon. I wouldn't do it in training, because if it reduces in training, your aim is not to perform at your best, but to get the majority, to get your gains. So if I am reducing the amount of exercise-induced muscle damage in training, I'm doing less damage, so therefore I'm having to recover and build my muscles less, so therefore I'm not getting the gains. Mm-hmm. So I would have them strategically in my drinks, but I wouldn't use them in training for that reason, because it can have an adverse effect on training.
Yeah, so once again, pointing out the difference between the training and the actual events is two. You're looking at it from two different angles, and this should be taken into consideration when you're going through your training plan and working out.
What's your goal? Is your game to finish for the best time, or do you want to, you know, train hard, suffer a bit, and get the most out of it so you can get a PB at the end of it?
So from what you're saying then, probably the perfect breakfast, and most runners have already found this out, is probably porridge, but stir in some blueberries.
I have that religiously with a banana every morning. Porridge, blueberries and banana.
The ultimate running breakfast. Right, just a couple of things before we move on. Chris says he runs well on pizza. Could be a bit stodgy, the pizza. Could be a bit stodgy. Is this your dad? Raw eggs, honey, milk mix?
I wouldn't eat raw eggs, but honey is a high GI product. So, again, I would avoid that 90 minutes prior to a race. But if you were to do an ultra, honey is something that you could introduce. Maybe a good homemade granola bar, something like that. It's brilliant for instant energy release. Milk, possibly not on a run.
No, milk reduces absorption of anything else you have. It stops stuff getting into you, so probably milk's not the best thing. I was just going to say, my breakfast when I've run a marathon or a half marathon so far is bagels and baked beans. Obviously, the wholemeal bagels, full of carbs, full of proteins, and the baked beans, obviously. Again, another processed food, but they're haricot beans covered in tomato sauce. Lovely.
I wouldn't recommend baked beans for everybody. The simple fact is it's high in fibre. Mm-hmm. So, which in normal circumstances, if you're training and stuff like that, so that's absolutely brilliant and et cetera. But if you're fueling prior to a marathon or during a marathon and you're having beans, I don't think I'd recommend it, because fiber is obviously carbohydrates that aren't digestible, so they're just going to be sitting on your stomach, and if you were to have too much of them, it could have an adverse effect in terms of the GI, gastrointestinal discomfort, etc. And it's what's really interesting about GI discomfort is when you're in fight or flight mode, so under stress and exercise, basically, the blood distribution goes from, let's say, 20 to 25% of your total blood distribution between me and you sitting here now is working on our digestive tracts, you know, pushing on our intestines and making sure that we're absorbing all the nutrients that we're, had for our lunch, dinner and breakfast, etc. today. However, if you're running and you're in fight or flight mode, your blood distribution, that 25% reduces to 6% because obviously your brain, your heart, thermoregulation and your muscles are in demand of all the nutrients, and only 6% of your blood actually gets distributed to your digestive tract. So that's why it's harder and it takes longer for you to absorb the food than it normally would in a rested state. And that's why a lot of people get, you know, tummy ache and things like that in when fueling and running at the same time.
Which has taken us back to the thing we've been saying all night. When in training and when going for a marathon, don't try anything new. You should be incorporating all these in and you should be used to what you're doing and know what works for you and what doesn't work for you.
Yeah.
Again, I've got a vegan diet, which is heavy fiber. I know what fiber does. So
if you're used to it, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Go for it. And probably lastly, the only thing I could probably mention is pre and probiotics, prebiotics and probiotics. We don't live alone in our body, and from our gastrointestinal tract or from our stomach downwards, as such, a small and large intestine, or the colon as it's referred to, they've got trillions of bacteria that live in there. And depending on what you eat, depending on who colonizes your guts, and obviously the good bacteria is what you want, so pro and prebiotics are good. However, if you've got a poor diet, and what can happen is if you carbo load, so let's say you're dieting for weight loss, you're training, etc., and you've got a really healthy diet rich in broccoli and all different fruits, etc., and then you start carbo loading with loads of simple sugars, so all of a sudden, all the bacteria that you've grown for the past 6 months who colonize your gut are dying off, and all the bacteria that like Mars bars, rice and pizza start to colonize your gut and repopulate the gut, and that can send you into all sorts of different states. And as a species kind of die off down there, they don't die off lightly. It's a bit like Star Wars, you know, they're going to cause some havoc while they're doing it, and they tend to, because they're starved, they tend to sometimes eat on your own stomach lining, and again cause gastrointestinal stress or distress, should I say. So huge changes to your diet aren't good if you click to it. And that's another reason why I said when you start carbo loading, start carbo loading throughout the whole taper period as such, so you're not changing it drastically there 2 days.
Fantastic. Right, I'm just looking at the time. We're nearly out of time. So as always, thank you very much indeed, Neil. It's been absolutely fascinating. But in the last couple of minutes, if anyone's got any quick questions, please put them in the comments now. If you could put hashtag question, that will help us out. If you do have any questions for Neil. Well, while we wait to see if any questions come in, just one last one. What is the perfect, or what is a really good recovery food? You know, when we've come in from that run, we've come in from that race, and we are rungry, as they say, you know, we can eat everything that's in the house. But what should we be looking at to recover from those long runs? I know when I've done a marathon, the first thing I've had is a bag of ready salted crisps, just to get the salts back into the body, because as we mentioned earlier on, you lose them. So having a bag of crisps or salty peanuts right at the end of a race is a good thing to get those salts back. But what else should we have? What would help us once we finished that race, we got home, we've sat down, I'm hungry?
I'm smiling because beer springs to mind.
Ah, now I will pull you
that's
on that.
Full of electrolytes.
I'm not saying that's bad for you, but however, when you've run a marathon, your taste buds have been shut down because they've not been needed. And that first drink you have after a marathon tastes like pants. So even if it's your favorite beer, the first one will be horrible. That's a warning to anybody who's not run a marathon before. And this is also the reason the likes of the Berlin Marathon have alcohol-free beer at the end. exactly that. You know, you can get one at the end. The sponsors are there and hand it out, but nobody seems to drink it because it all tastes like pants.
Yeah. I mean, this first thing you're going to want to replenish is carbs. I mean, your blood sugars are going to be depleted instantaneously. Up to you what kind of carbs you want, because it's your body's going to thank you for it. And then the secondary, I would say, you've just created, you know, a high oxidative stress. You've created a lot of exercise-induced muscle damage, and there's two things that are going to help with that. Anthocyanins, so polyphenols, antioxidants. So lots of fruit and veg in your recovery days as such, and protein, high protein.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Right. And on that bombshell, as they say on a certain motoring program, we shall leave it there. Thank you, everybody, for watching tonight. If you haven't done so, please don't forget to hit subscribe. And also, if you could give this video a thumbs up, that will help us immensely. It will help the channel grow and it will get more fans for Neil. So if you could do that for us, that would be fantastic. Can you just remind us where your Facebook page is, Neil?
RSFH on Facebook. So it's Running Fitness for Strength and Health on Facebook. Keep a low profile.
So if you want any help from Neil, you know, he's more than willing to help you out. So, yeah, fantastic. So once again, thank you very much indeed, Neil, for being there. Thank you for everybody who has joined us for watching. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for your questions. Hope to see you all again very soon.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week again for a fresh round.
The Tony James Podcast.